joy, even if it's just one tiny little thing that we can save for a day, we can find some good in every day. Hello and welcome back to Pear Shaped, a podcast aimed to encourage and inspire millennial women to be their most authentic self and discover what's possible when you embrace when things go pear-shaped. Sophie Cliff, aka The Joyful Coach, is a life coach and positive psychology practitioner. She specialises in helping people find joy in their everyday lives using clever techniques to switch to a more positive mindset. Welcome, Sophie!
Hello!
How are you?
I'm really good, thank you. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. I'm good. So I don't know whether you've heard any previous episodes, but I always kickstart by asking my guests what their pear-shaped moment is and how it's got them to where they are now.
Yeah, so I was really, when you sent across this question, I was like, oh, what to choose, because there are so many. And I imagine a lot of other guests might say something similar. But for me, I think it was sort of getting to my mid to late 20s and realizing that I was in entirely the wrong career. And sort of then trying to unpick all of that and figure out how to navigate it and where to start. And it felt really, really overwhelming, but I'm so glad that I had that moment then rather than in like another 20 years time when I was so much further down the line.
Yeah. And how did you have that like light bulb moment of this isn't what I'm meant to be doing?
Yeah, I think I had actually had it, rather than it being a light bulb moment, I think I'd had a bit of a curiosity that it was the wrong thing for a little while. So I had on paper a very successful career. I worked at big companies like the Walt Disney Company, and I got to do really fun things in my job. I got to travel a lot and go to movie premieres and do all this cool stuff, but it never ever felt like successful or purposeful or joyful to me. It just always felt like there was something missing. And I spent a lot of time sort of like thinking, oh, maybe if I change company, that'll be the thing. Or maybe I need a slightly different role. Or maybe if like my team was a little bit different. And I think I had a bit of a gut intuition that it wasn't quite right, but I almost didn't want to admit to it. And then the thing that actually made me take it seriously was we had a tragic bereavement in my family. Well, it was over 5 years ago now, and we lost my younger cousin. And that was for me a moment where, you know, when like you read, like we all read on Pinterest or Instagram, those quotes that are like, life is too short and like seize the day. And it's so easy to just scroll past them. And actually that experience for me was one of those things where I was like, oh, like crap, it is really short and we don't know what's around the corner. And I think up until that point, subconsciously, I'd thought like, if I do all the right things and I tick all the right boxes and I make like the decisions that are expected of me, then like life will go really smoothly. And I had a bit of a moment of like, ah, that's not how it works. Like, you know, bad stuff happens, even if you're doing all the right things, and you just have to crack on and go with it, you know. Bad stuff still happens and you have to seize like the moments that we've got, and you have to just really make the most of it. And I think that was really the wake-up call, and that was where I started to take that like itch that this wasn't quite right seriously and started to actually unpack it and think about it and do something about it. But yeah, it wasn't perhaps a light bulb moment, it was like something that started as a little seed that grew, and then it almost, that experience for me gave me, I suppose, the confidence to think like, or in a strange way, like a permission slip to explore something a little bit different.
I mean, it's awful that it took a tragic event to make that happen. But so, I think that happens a lot in people's lives, and people are gonna be going through a lot right now through the last 18 plus months. And I feel like we're hearing a lot of people taking that leap of faith into a new career. And particularly in the kind of late 20s, early 30s group, I would say, I feel like there's a lot of that going on. What would your advice be to anyone that's thinking about doing the same?
I think it is like to not ignore that hunch, because it's so, so hard when you don't know what lies on the other side. You just think, like, you know, it's the unknown. It's the fear of the unknown. And of course, the unknown is scary, like, because we just can't know, and we like to have certainty. You know, the last few years have shown us how humans react when we don't have certainty and when things feel a little bit more chaotic. And so it's so easy to try and ignore that hunch and push it down and come up with all the reasons why not to. And what I always say, I like my experience and the experience of some of my clients who I've supported through career change, is that when we start to like line up what we actually feel passionate about, something that we really, you know, want to do, something that feels purposeful, we can make things happen so much more quickly. So I look back on like my previous career, which was a decade long working in corporate, and yeah, I did like some cool things, but like the amount that I managed to achieve in 10 years was nothing compared to what I've been able to do in 2 years since I've changed lanes and been able to really throw myself into something that I'm passionate about. So I think not ignoring that hunch, like giving yourself permission, you know, I'm not saying quit your job and, you know, then try and figure something out. Do it in a way that feels safe to you, but like giving yourself just some permission to explore what that hunch might be trying to tell you. And I think then it is really just about thinking about what will actually make you feel like you're living in alignment with your values, you're feeling more purposeful, you're feeling more excited about, because I think that is the magic ingredient. And again, from seeing people who are very talented, very skilled, very clever, very smart, but not in a role or an industry that fulfills them, it's hard to like reach that potential, I think, when you don't fully feel immersed in what you're doing.
Yeah, when you haven't got something that like sets your soul on fire, basically, you can kind of get onto the hamster wheel, can't you? You keep going and you keep going, but you're never gonna be fulfilled. So I guess now we'll move on to like what you do now. And I'm sure you get asked this all the time, but why joy? Why the joyful coach?
So again, the focus on joy really was born out of that experience that I had, because that was really the most difficult period in my life. I'd led quite a charmed life, actually, up until that point. I hadn't really had too much, like, you know, to unpack or to think about. I've been really lucky. And that experience was really, really difficult. And I dealt for a long time. And, you know, grief isn't something that you ever move past, but it was a real big part of my life for a long time. And I had some other things like post-traumatic stress disorder and heightened anxiety. And it was a really, really difficult time. But what I found in that time was that it was focusing on the joy and focusing on some of the positives that really helped me to get through it and to build that resilience. And I think up until that point, I'd always seen things as quite like black or white, like things were either good or bad. Like I was either happy and I was having a good day, or I was sad and I was having a bad day. And what that experience taught me is that actually life is like a blend of everything. And even on the really, really, really difficult days, there is something that you can find a little bit of joy in. So it might have been like a text from a friend that was checking in, or something funny that like one of my nieces or nephews said, or you know, like coming home and having that lovely feeling of like, oh, I'm home and I feel safe, or whatever it might be. And it was focusing on those little moments that helped me to build my resilience back up and helped me to start to sort of like get back out into the world and start doing the things, you know, that felt important to me again. And so that really planted like a bit of a seed, I think, of the more we focus on the good, it's not about like diminishing the bad or, you know, taking this toxic positivity approach. It's that actually joy, I experienced that joy like built my capacity and resilience to just deal with some of the difficult stuff. And that made me really curious about it. And I sort of started to then go down a bit of a rabbit hole in terms of positive psychology and some of the research that had been done in this field. And I found that like there was this whole field of like 25 years of study looking at the impact of positivity and joy and all of these things. And I think the reason why I specifically focus on joy and not just say like happiness or positivity as a broader concept is that joy is that thing that it doesn't require everything to be perfect for. I think sometimes happiness can feel quite circumstantial. So we're happy because it's Christmas, or we're happy because we got a promotion, or we're happy because like the sun is shining. You know, it is a response to something that is external that happens to us. Whereas joy is something that we can kind of cultivate for ourselves and we can focus on. And I think that's what I've really seen in this last couple of years through the pandemic is people's capacity to find that joy even when so much is taken away. So we might not have felt happy back in January when we were in lockdown and like we hadn't left the house for a month, but we could be like, you know, find a little bit of joy in preparing a really lovely dinner, or find a bit of joy in, you know, FaceTiming a friend, or like watching the latest episode of Selling Sunset, or like just finding these little like nuggets of something to find joy in and to concentrate on. And I think that's where it is, you know, like happiness is great, but it tends to be more fluctuating, whereas joy, even if it's just one tiny little thing that we can save for a day, we can find some good in every day.
You're spot on, because I think with happiness, you're expected to feel happy in big moments. And sometimes that doesn't always work for someone. You might feel the joy of, you know, the new job, the promotion, whatever it is. But sometimes those sort of big life events can be very overwhelming. And then that can also add pressure, can't it, in another way? This time of year is incredibly stressful. It can feel like a rat race to like achieve your goals before the end of the year. There's a big comparison culture, and this time of year I feel brings that out. What's your advice to anyone that's struggling with comparing or stressing about the fact that they might not have reached their goals that the friends have reached this year or whatever?
I was so excited when you sort of asked me to come on and talk about this, because I think it's something we've really seen arising since like the lockdowns ending here in the UK, and since like life has become a little bit more in quotation marks normal, because like what is normal and will we ever get there again? Who knows? But you know, I think since life has started to get back to some version of normality, that comparison has been really, really strong again. And I felt it myself, and I know from talking to clients, it's there. And again, like you said, in that run up to Christmas and the new year, we see loads of those posts, don't we, of like reflecting on everything I've achieved this year, or like, look how great life is. And I never want to take away from those things, because it is important to celebrate those moments, but it can be really hard if we're in that place of comparison. And I think for me, the biggest thing that I always try to share with people if we're stuck in that comparison trap is changing the filter. So when we are in that moment of comparing, we are very much like looking at the world with an external gaze. So we are looking outside of ourselves, either looking at what everybody else is doing or trying to imagine how other people are looking at us. So we might be sort of thinking, oh gosh, that person's, you know, been on 3 holidays and got a new job and bought a new house and yada, yada, yada. And so we're looking outwards, or we might be thinking other people might be looking at us saying, well, what have they done? Or why did they make that decision? Or why are they still in that job? But it's always coming from a place outside of ourselves when we get into that comparison mindset. So I always invite people to sort of go back to the internal and notice like what that comparison is there for and what it might be trying to teach us. So is it there just because we are trying to please other people? And if so, that can then be something that we can, you know, sort of try to wave goodbye to and take some steps. Or is it there because actually deep down we feel like, you know, we should be doing something different? I know I used to compare myself a lot when I was in my old job to people who were like building their own businesses and doing things. And actually in hindsight, I can see that wasn't necessarily me just beating myself up. It was me starting to go, could I do something like that? Is that something that I would enjoy? So sometimes there is, you know, some sort of like little nuggets of wisdom or information that we can take from who we're comparing ourselves to and when, and, you know, what sort of triggers there are for our comparison. But I think it's really coming back to that internal sense of what feels good to us. What do we need? Is it that, you know, like, it can be really, really easy to, for example, like log into LinkedIn. I did an economics degree and I worked in corporate for 10 years. So sometimes when I log into LinkedIn, old colleagues or old classmates will be like, oh, like I've just, you know, become CEO of this company, or I've just become the director of brand for the whole of like this huge big brand. And it's so easy to go, oh, like I should be doing that. Is that something I should be doing? Should I have stayed in that old career? And actually, when I come internally and I think about what my values are, what is most important to me, what I want to achieve, how I want to spend my time, I quickly see that that's not a good fit. But so often all we are doing is comparing like the LinkedIn status or, you know, the person who like is on holiday in the Maldives in January, but then spends the rest of their year working like 80 hours a week at a job that they don't really like. It's so easy to just compare that high point. And so that's what I would always recommend, is rather than looking external, coming internal and sort of saying, what is most important to me? What are my values? You know, what are the things that I want to be doing with my life? And it might be that you still say, actually, I still do want a little bit of what that other person has got. And that's when we can use that as information and we can use that to make a positive change. But trying to really get to the crux of why the comparison is happening and what it is that it's trying to tell us, I think can really help. Because so often it is just that, like, we live in, like, I've been calling it sort of like the age of announcement culture. You know, it feels like everything, every time you log in anywhere, someone is making an announcement. They're either pregnant or buying a house or got a new job or signed a book deal or whatever it might be. And so therefore we think that sometimes just like living a good day-to-day life isn't important because it hasn't got these big high points. But really remembering that like life is made up of that every day. It's not made up of these big like announcements and these big peaks. It's what we're doing every day. And so if we're feeling good on more days than we're not, we're usually going in the right direction.
That's great advice, because I think particularly social media, you log on and you're right, you see the pregnancy announcement, someone else on holiday. And would you recommend taking a step back if it's becoming overwhelming and, you know, giving yourself breaks from social media? Or do you think it's best to kind of ride through the wave, like you said, kind of go inwards and look inwards rather than just burying your head in the sand?
I think it's really important to know your triggers. So like I was talking to a client the other day who was saying this time of year for her is really triggering because it feels like everyone is having these perfect family Christmases and she doesn't have that type of relationship with her family, and she finds it really overwhelming to like log on to Instagram and see everyone with like their grandparents sat around the table or whatever it might be. And so for her, it feels like really important to minimize that, to, you know, take that out of the equation, that kind of thing. I think if you know deep down that comparison, like for some people, comparison is so much harder with like their closest friends. I think there is actually some research that shows we're more likely to compare with people who we like were in the same year at school as, or we went to university with, because we can sort of see we got off the starting blocks at the same time as those people. So it feels like easier to compare. So it might be for some people that actually comparison is worse when they meet in the pub on Christmas Eve for those Christmas drinks and they're hearing what everyone else is up to. So I think it's really important to sort of know where your trigger is and to try and think about what you need to minimize getting into that cycle. So if it is, you know, you can like delete Instagram or minimize the amount of time that you go on there or unfollow certain people, great, go for it. Like, I love the mute function on Instagram because no one needs to know you've unfollowed them. No one needs to know that, like, you know, you're like quietening the volume down on their announcements or whatever that might be. But equally, if it's that like actually, you know, that coming up in the next few weeks you've got drinks with old school friends or you're going back home to where you come from and that triggers a lot of comparison, then maybe think about what you need to like help you in that. Is it about really connecting to your own goals and thinking about why you have chosen like the path that you have? Is it about thinking about, you know, actually the night after I see those people, I just want to have a quiet night and I'm going to like get my journal out and get some thoughts out, or I'm going to, you know, call my friend who can really validate that, like, yes, you are doing the right things for you. So I think it's really about knowing what those triggers look like. And I think the other thing to be aware of at this time of year is that sometimes the comparison is done on our behalf. So I know something a lot of people worry about is going home and mum saying, you know, oh, did you know such and such a buddy's daughter has got this job? Or did you know such and such a buddy's like niece has just got married? Or, you know, sitting around the table with aunties and uncles and grandparents who say, oh, are you still you're still running your little business. I'm sure that's one that, you know, any small business owner can recognise. So sometimes it's
they just don't get what you do at all. And they're just like, so what do you do again?
Sometimes the comparison is almost like done for us. So again, just being aware of those triggers and knowing, like, the more we can know internally, I'm doing the right thing for me, the easier it is to almost be resilient to that comparison.
This time of year, it's very easy to set unrealistic expectations of ourselves. How would you control those? Like, I'm guilty of it. I'll be like, you know, I need to get another 10,000 followers by the end of the year. And, you know, we've got a month left. And it's kind of like, that's probably not going to happen. How do you control that?
I think there are a few things that we can do here. So one is understanding why we are setting those sorts of goals and why we have to have this hard deadline of the end of the year. And again, that often comes back to looking at life through that external lens. So, because we want to be able to say to other people, oh, I hit my goal, or, you know, to outwardly celebrate some of these things. So always starting with that question of why, of like, why do you want those extra followers by the end of the year? Or why do you want to have, like, launched this thing or got that new job or whatever? Like, what is it that feels meaningful about that? And if it is because I want to be able to go home at Christmas and share this news, or I want to be able to do this epic end of year roundup post, again, asking ourselves, like, well, what will that give me? Like, is that about validation? Is that about proving something to somebody else? And perhaps, like, what is the, like, healthier lens that we can put on that? How can we give ourselves some of that validation? I think the other thing is really trying to bring some intention to this time of year, because I think, you know, you've just sort of talked about it there being like quite a conscious thing, but actually what I see more is that that's quite a subconscious thing. So, you know, consciously we might be like, doesn't really matter how many followers I end the year with, it'll be fine, the world will turn, and we might know that in like our logical brain, but subconsciously we might have this like desire to tick all the boxes and have the most amazing Christmas and do all of these big things. And so really just trying to bring some intention to thinking about what we want this like last month of the year to be all about, and, you know, really thinking about how do we want to feel come the end of the year and what is going to help us to do that. And often when we ask ourselves that question, it might be like, I just want to end the year feeling like really calm, really content, really grounded, so that I can go into next year feeling strong. Or, you know, actually my biggest priority is, you know, I'm sure for lots of people it will be things like spending this time with loved ones and making up for what was like a tricky end to the year last year. And actually when we bring that intention in, it's then easier to say, so work can take the back seat for the next month, or so actually work is going to be really important to me come January, so I need to spend lots of time like on like taking care of myself and making sure that I don't get to January feeling completely burnt out from trying to do everything all at once. So I would really just encourage people to think, like, to really consciously think, and it can take 5 minutes, you know, just sitting down and sort of going, what type of Christmas do I want and need this year? Like, how do I want to feel by the time I get to the end of the year? You know, how do I want to feel on the morning of New Year's Day? And, you know, as I'm thinking and looking ahead, and then almost like retrofitting, okay, what actions do I need to take to get there? And finally, I think the important thing is accepting that we can't do it all. Something that I think is really, really hard at this time of year is like, we want to finish work strong and we want to go to every single party and we want to like still keep up our exercise routines and feel really healthy. And sometimes there's just an acceptance of like, we can't do all of those things at 100%. So what is the priority? What is the most important thing? Is it like say, spending that time with loved ones? Is it that you do actually really want to finish work strong and therefore we might need to turn some invites down, or we might need to let our health like take a bit of a back seat? Really just sort of sometimes when we can like accept that we can't do everything 100%, it gives us some freedom to really focus on the most important thing.
That's great advice. Pear Shaped as a podcast is all about confidence and being authentic. And I feel like confidence and joy go hand in hand. How can people build more confidence using joy? Like, there must be a way.
Oh, I absolutely love this question and I love this correlation because I've really seen this in my own life. Is the more I've focused on my own joy, that confidence has felt quite like easy and natural to build instead of this forced thing. And I think it again comes back to this idea of focusing on the internal rather than the external, because joy is very much like a process of focusing on ourselves and what is good in our lives. And, you know, there's lots of research that show that grateful people report the highest level of joy because they are focusing on what is good in their lives. They, you know, feel, they find it easy to access joy because they are in a habit of really thinking about what is good about their life and what they're grateful for and what they appreciate. And I think that then starts to build, you know, it builds this cycle of confidence, because the more we feel like, yep, my life is good and I've got these things that I, you know, I'm enjoying every single day, the more we can start to feel confident that we are on the right track. And I think sometimes, or a lot of the time actually, oftentimes I would say pretty much all my clients that I work with, when there is a lack of confidence there, it often comes down to, it, like it often shows up, sorry, in a way that manifests as like not trusting that they're on the right path, not trusting that they can make the right decision for them. And that's again where we get into that comparison, like we're looking at every single option and thinking, should I be doing that? Should I be doing this? How can I know that this is the right thing for me? And I think that is sometimes, we think about lack of confidence as like not going for the job or not showing up for ourselves or not putting ourselves out there. But often we're not doing that because we don't trust that we are making the right decision for ourselves. And I think the more we start to focus on what feels good, what am I enjoying, like where am I finding joy in my life, the greater that sense of intuition becomes, because we're almost like having a conversation with ourselves in a way that often we don't. You know, we are always like, I definitely used to be the sort of person who would be like, Mum, do you think I should apply for this job? Or like to my husband, do you think I should apply for this job? But what about this? But what about that? And I was always like looking externally to get other people's opinions and other people's validation. And the more we can start to focus on, well, what would feel good to me? And would I enjoy doing that? And what parts of that would I enjoy? And what parts of it would I perhaps not enjoy? The more we can have that internal conversation, the more we can build that sense of intuition and build that sense of confidence that we know what is right for us. And I always say that, like, as a coach, that forms the basis of all of my work, is that I trust that the people that I work with know themselves better than anybody else in the world. Because if you think about it, we're the only ones who have been there for every experience, every conversation, every meltdown, every achievement. You know, even our parents or our partners or our best friends only ever get to see snippets of that. And yet so often we give that power over to other people. And so really trying to build that relationship with ourselves, I think, is the key to building that confidence. And joy is a really great place to start, because we know what joy feels like. We know, you know, I really enjoyed that. That felt really good. That felt really natural, versus that felt really tricky. That felt really difficult. And I think something that's really important in like the context of this is trusting that things can be easy and joyful, because something I see a lot of clients come up against is feeling like confidence has to be hard won. Like we can only be confident when we've really pushed, or when we've really done something difficult, when we've like gone through every hurdle. And actually, you know, what we see in the research and what we see in practice is that when things feel easy, we can, you know, when we lean into the stuff that feels really natural and joyful to us, we can do more, we can be more successful, we can show up more confidently if it's within our like zone of genius. So joy can often be like prioritizing the things that feel joyful to us can be a fast track to understanding what we would be most confident with.
It's spot on. Like, you're just saying everything I feel at the moment, because I think this last couple of years have knocked a lot of people's confidence, and it's kind of, people are at a bit of a crossroads at the moment with like, where do I go next? What do I do? And I've definitely been guilty in the past of asking my mum's opinion and my boyfriend's opinion. And actually, you're right, they're not me. They don't know. Like, my mum's idea of a perfect job is probably not the same as mine. So why have I been asking her, you know? There's lots of things always to be positive about. But if someone has the like dark, stormy clouds over them at the moment, how can they find joy?
I think it's really getting in the habit of searching for it. And I think what is most difficult when you're in that dark place is it isn't obvious. And it's so much easier to focus on what isn't going well. And I know that, like, I've definitely been in those places before, you know, like I've struggled with different things. I've struggled with grief and anxiety and depression and all of these things. And it can be a real challenge sometimes. But I think it's like getting into the practice of seeking it out and looking for it. Because even if it is literally like this morning, I got up, I opened the door to get our milk out, and there was just this like amazing sunrise. And we've had some snow here in the last couple of days. And I was like, oh, that just looks lovely. And like, if that was the only thing for the whole day, just that one moment of going, that looks really pretty, that is a little bit of joy. So it, I think recognizing that it doesn't have to be the big shiny stuff. I think so often when we think about finding and prioritizing joy in our lives, we think, okay, well, I need to book a holiday, or I need to buy a new outfit, or I need to like go out for dinner with that person, or, you know, we are looking for the big stuff. And actually what the research tells us is that big stuff doesn't make us any happier. So I don't know if you've ever come across the concept of arrival fallacy, but it's this idea that we overestimate how happy things are going to make us. So we think, if I get this new job, I'm going to be really happy. Or if I like find my dream partner, then I'll be really happy. Or when I get married or buy a house or earn 10 grand more or whatever it might be. And what the research shows is that when those things happen, we do have a spike in happiness and life satisfaction, but it usually lasts no longer than 3 weeks. And then we acclimatize and we come back down to our base level. And so when I talk about like finding joy, it's not that we want to erase those peaks. Like, we still want like the high of like Christmas or going on a holiday or, you know, getting a promotion or whatever. But we want to raise the baseline so that when we come down over the other side, we're coming back to a higher level. And that's what finding those little everyday joys helps us to do, is it raises the baseline. It makes us feel better in our day-to-day lives. So really, I would encourage anyone who is in that dark place to just start focusing on like what tiny, tiny little things can we find day-to-day. It might be, you know, drank my cup of tea when it was at its perfect temperature, or that friend sent me a text to check in and that was really lovely of them, or the postman was really friendly this morning. It might not be, you know, these big life-changing things, but the more we notice and clock up some of those little joys, what recent research in neuroscience has shown is that the more we focus on them, the easier it is for our brain to form those more positive pathways. There's a theory called broaden and build, which sits at like the heart of positive psychology, that shows that when we experience positive emotions, we build our capacity for positive emotions. So it's like an upward spiral. The more we focus on the good, the more capacity for joy we have. And so just starting really small, one thing a day, can start to build that positive upward spiral.
Do you recommend for anyone listening to just write it down, or do they journal, or is it kind of just a mental note, like you said, when you open the door and there's a nice sunrise, do you just say, wow, that's my joy for today? What is your recommendation?
What I always say is doing it in whatever way you will actually do it, because what I see a lot of the time is that like perfection gets in the way of actually doing the thing. So, and I know this because this was me for a really long time. It's like, I'd buy a really lovely new notebook and I'd be like, right, I'm going to write my gratitude list every night. And then I'd do it perfectly for about 4 days. And then I'd forget a day and I'd be like, well, I need to give up on that now because, you know, I haven't done it perfectly. And so it's really thinking about like, it's the process of doing it that gets you the reward rather than doing it perfectly. So for some people, if they are already in a habit of journaling or sitting down or writing, or they know that that's going to be something that helps them to remember to do it, that's great. For others, that might actually be a bit of a barrier to taking the action because they think, oh, well, I've left the notebook at my boyfriend, so I don't need to do it tonight. Or, you know, oh, I forgot to do it and now I'm in bed, so I'm not going to bother. So it's actually doing it. So sometimes, like, I do like to write mine down because I do a lot of journaling. But sometimes if I forget, I might just be laying in bed and I'll say to my husband, oh, this was the thing that I really enjoyed from today. Or like, this was the thing that I'm feeling grateful for. And often what happens is the more you do it, the easier it is to do it in that sort of like moment. So, you know, like I said, opening the door, that's easier because I've started to build that sort of pathway in my brain. So I would really just sort of encourage people like to try and to experiment and to, you know, we know ourselves, if you are a bit of a perfectionist, trying to set it up in a really perfect way might not work. It might be that you want to, you know, put it in the notes section on your iPhone because you know you've always got your phone with you, or that you might want to verbally say it to someone and that's how you keep each other accountable. It doesn't really matter how we do it so long as we've got that sort of noticing in place.
It's actually also about slowing down, right? Because you're asking your clients and everybody else around you to slow down, and you're not rushing through your morning coffee. If that's the thing that brings you joy, you're going to nurture that thing inside of you that seeks that joy, which I think is so important, bearing in mind we live in such a fast-paced world now, which leads on very nicely to the fact that we are always told to lean in, you know, seize the day, keep going. And what if we do want to take a step back? Like, we know that JOMO, the joy of missing out, is now a thing. How do we stop kind of the voice in our head saying, no, you've got to keep going, and that sort of like toxic positivity that you touched on earlier, when all we want to do is find joy in missing out?
Do you know, there's an exercise that I love to do this personally, and I use it with my clients a lot as well, and it's called playing the tape till the end. And it's a exercise that is sometimes used in like addiction recovery, actually, because it's about helping to like make the right decisions in the moment that help us in the future. But I think it can be used for all sorts of things. And I think the way I think about it in relation to the question you've asked is thinking about like what your future self is going to thank you for. Because so often when we're making those decisions to keep going, we aren't thinking about ourselves at all. We're thinking about everybody else. We're thinking, well, I've got to go to that birthday party because otherwise I'll let that person down. Or I need to get that work done tonight because otherwise my boss won't be happy. And we're thinking about all of these people around us, or we're thinking, you know, or we're getting into that sort of like state of feeling like we should. Oh, I should do that because that's what's expected of me. What we can do with playing the tape out to the end is see how those decisions impact our future selves. So, you know, if it's a Friday night and there's work drinks going on and every fibre of your being is being like, you should go there, you should do this, you should do that, play it out to the end. Like, what will you be most glad that you did by the time you're getting into bed? Or what will you be most glad that you did come Sunday when, you know, you've either taken this lovely evening to relax and to spend that time on you, or you've gone out and you've ticked all the boxes and you've spent 100 quid and you've had a hangover. Like, what sort of gets you to the end of the tape that you want to get to, and playing out like sort of each scenario. And I find that really helpful because it helps us to break some of the like patterns that we've almost got into by accident. I think it can help as well in like making decisions around prioritizing joy, is that sometimes we know like, oh, if I like go to that yoga class, I will feel calmer and I'll feel happier afterwards. But in the moment, it's easier to stay in bed. And so it like helps us play out like, how will I feel this afternoon if I take this path versus the other path? And noticing, I think what that helps us to do is see like the value in saying no sometimes, because every time we say yes to something, we are saying no to something else, but we don't see it like that in our mind. We just see it as like, well, I wasn't going to do anything tonight anyway, so I should say yes, or I should let other people fill my diary. And when you practice that sort of playing the tape out to the end exercise, you see, well, if I do stay home, what would I do? Like, I'd, you know, have a really lovely bath and I'd get my pajamas on and I'd watch that film I've been meaning to watch and I'd have an early night. And we can sort of see what else we might do with that time instead of just seeing it as I'd be at home or I'd be at this party, which, you know, the party sounds like the more exciting thing when you look at it that way. So it helps us to sort of like flesh out and colour in what the alternative is.
That's, again, great advice. I keep repeating myself because I always feel guilty about not going to things, particularly post-pandemic, because you're kind of thinking, I was in for however long we were stuck inside for, I should want to go to this or I should want to go to that. And I think that's one thing that I've noticed, like the beauty of getting older is the guilt isn't as high as it used to be. In my early 20s, I would not say no to anything. I would literally, you know, put a night out on my credit card, even if I couldn't afford it, you know? Whereas now I really feel, yeah, there is joy in missing out, which I think is really important. We are a burnout generation and we are filled with a lot of anxiety and a lot of depression. Unfortunately, mental health is at an all-time high. How do we know when the anxiety is stopping us and when the fear is creeping in over doing the right thing?
I think there are a few things here. I think one, like the more we strengthen that sense of intuition and that like conversation with ourselves, the easier it becomes to like separate the two things. And this is where sometimes like actually dropping into our body, and that sounds like a really woo-woo thing to say, like drop into your body and see how it feels. But our bodies are amazing at really quickly processing information and like making snap decisions. And I don't know about you, but I know that things feel very different to me when I like actually tune in and notice what's going on. Real fear and like real anxiety and worry about something feels very different to something that I'm like, oh, I'm actually quite curious about that and I'm quite excited, but it feels a little bit outside of my comfort zone. So sometimes just actually like taking that deep breath and noticing, how does this feel? Like, what is my body trying to tell me here? If we've got like a gut reaction that this isn't a safe thing to do, like how do we listen to that and process that versus something that is just maybe like, that feels scary, it feels uncomfortable. There's perhaps a little bit of imposter syndrome there, but it's still something at the heart that I actually really want. I think journaling can really help with that as well, and getting some ideas down on paper. There's a really another sort of exercise that is taken from CBT, so from cognitive behavioral therapy, called putting your thoughts on trial, that I really like, because there's something about writing something down that takes it out of like the more anxious space in our brain and makes it really logical. So the idea is that you write down whatever thought you are having, and then you write a defense for that thought, and you write a prosecution of that thought, and then try to come to a sort of like more neutral verdict. So like an example I can give you on this is when do we know when it's anxiety versus, you know, just not knowing quite the right thing to do, you know, or it is a real sort of feeling. When I was thinking about leaving my job, like all of my thoughts were like, no, we can't do this. This isn't safe. This isn't right. You know, if you leave your job, you're going to be homeless on the streets overnight and it's going to be terrible. And actually going through that exercise and sort of writing a defense and saying, okay, why is it okay to feel scared about leaving my job? And, you know, there were a lot of like beliefs there, and I've been in that career a long time, and there were lots of reasons why it might feel safer to stay in that job. But then when I wrote a prosecution of why are some of these thoughts that I'm having perhaps a little bit extreme or a little bit, I'd added a little bit of artistic license. I don't think there was really a world where I was going to end up homeless overnight. But writing these things down sort of helped me to really see and tap into like, what is the neutral thing here? And something I see a lot with clients, and again, in my own experience, is that as soon as we get specific about what the fear is, we can start to take action. The fear has more of a hold on us when we aren't specific. And, you know, we see it with COVID, right? We had a couple of days where the news has got a little bit more intense, and logic, like our, like overnight, we start to feel like everything bad's going to happen again. We're going to be in lockdown, and we start to feel this anxiety and this fear ramp up. When we get really specific about what is happening and what are the bits that I'm scared about, we can then start to put actions in place, and it minimizes, and we can start to move from a place of like feeling stuck and stagnant and move into action and starting to think, okay, that's the thing that I'm scared about. So what do I need to do to reduce that fear? Or what insurance policies do I need to put in place? Or, you know, what are some of the things that I just have to come to terms with are a bit of a risk, and, you know, we'll have to see how it goes. It's often the not understanding what the fear is that keeps us stuck and keeps us in this sort of like anxious, heightened state.
That's yeah, you've hit the nail on the head, because it's everything I'm feeling at the moment. I think with the news and everything like that, it's just kind of, and like I said, I get really anxious at this time of year, because I know that these kind of have this real cutoff in my head that everything needs to be done by the end of the year. And I think everyone does it. They cram in seeing friends, and for some reason, you know, you can't possibly book in something for January. Yeah. It's like
on the 2nd of January.
It's always got to be like, I've got to see you before Christmas and the new year and everything. So I feel like a lot of people will have related to what we've spoken about. And I just wanted to say a massive thank you for all your knowledge and your joy as well, because it's really helpful, and I feel like I've been a sponge just like listening to everything you've been saying. So thank you for your time. I really, really appreciate it.
No, my pleasure. And I think, yeah, trying to keep it practical is always the best way. We can talk about like, oh yes, like we should all prioritize more joy, but if we don't actually have the tools to do it, then it's a load of nonsense. So hopefully that's given people some like practical things to put into action.
Thank you so much for listening. This is the last episode of the series before the Christmas break, and I just wanted to say a massive thank you to the listeners for keeping this going and listening to the wonderful women I've interviewed over the last couple of months. I feel very, very lucky for them to give up their time for me, and I really hope that you've enjoyed listening to them too. I think they're amazing. So have a wonderful Christmas break, and I will be back in the new year with another season.